Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is April 6th, and what a great day it is. I have to say that it is my sister's birthday and my niece's birthday, so I'm just going to wish them a happy birthday, even though, quite frankly, I'm not sure that either one of them listens to the show. I know my niece doesn't. She's too young, but that's okay. I've put it out there to the universe, and it will be fantastic. So I want to remind you guys of the show that's coming up next on April 20th. It's Stephen Victor. I've had Stephen on before. It was quite the entertaining show. I was thankful to have a guest on because we had the most lively chat room I think I've ever experienced in my time of doing the Honoring Hour. So I'm really looking forward to having Stephen on here with me on the 20th and excited to hear what he wants to talk about. He hasn't given me his topic yet, but he's a fantastic speaker, so I'm looking forward to that. Also, wanted to remind you guys that Karen Wrigley and I are collaborating to bring you some seminars and retreats called Experiencing You, Living, Loving, Laughing in Challenging Times. We want to help you guys reduce your stress, learn how to live in today's world authentically, and just be able to do it without a lot of pressure and still get done what you want to get done and what you have to get done. So we hope that you'll join us. The first one of those is on April 30th, and you can find out more about that by going to the homepage of The Honoring Hour, www.thehonoringhour.com. We're going to be doing combining our efforts together, and Karen Wrigley is an animal communicator. And whenever I've done anything with Karen, it's always fun because the animals are so lively. So I hope that you'll take a look there and join us. So I want to introduce today's guest. I was so delighted when I got she was brought to my awareness. I think that there's some very overlooked topics on the planet, and this her topic is definitely one of them. Our guest today is Sid Corpy, and she is the author of Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. And she's just put this wonderful topic out there, and I'm so glad to be able to have her on the show today. How are you doing, Sid?
I am very well, and thank you so much for having me.
Great. Well, I'm very glad to have you here, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Oh, and by the way, I have a sister and a niece who share a birthday, but it's in January. I bet. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's great. They're not mother and daughter, so that makes that makes it fun. But they, they're quite a ways away from each other too. But don't tell my sister that. But my niece was telling me the other day that she says, I think Aunt Sue was born first. I said, I think you're right.
She has a future in mathematics.
Yes, she does. So, Sid, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I can. I'm very familiar with me.
That's a great thing to be familiar with.
I have a really eclectic background. I have been an English teacher, a journalist, a writer, editor, proofreader, actress, singer with a jazz band. It goes on and on, aerobics instructor. I mean, all these things that I look at as a patchwork quilt that creates my life and keeps me very interested in what every day unfolds for me. And since I wrote this book, I've taken on duties as an animal chaplain. I'm also an ordained non-sectarian minister. And as an animal chaplain, I help people prepare for, cope with, and move on after pet loss. And the reason I had written my book was in light of the recent tsunamis in Japan, I had a personal tsunami of loss. Over a fairly short period of time, just a few short years, I lost my mother, stepfather, uncle, 3 dogs, 2 cats, cockatiel, and 15-year marriage. And when something sweeps through your life and takes that much away, it's only natural that you would reevaluate and look at what's really, really important. And, you know, you face a few daunting questions like, why am I still on this side of the veil when everyone I love is over there? And I was fortunately given that answer over time, and this book kind of unfolded and has taken flight on its own and really provided me with a purpose and a sense of peace and contentment to say, I can wait my time out here because I know it's important and this was intended for me.
Well, and I have to say, after reading your book, you can tell in your book, you mention a few times in your book the different things that you've done or just the things that have been in your background. And I was thinking about, wow, what a fascinating person this is. You know, you don't know what you tell about what you do because you really stay focused on the topic of the book, which is great. But, you know, in reading this, I can remember having to euthanize an animal a while back. And I was fortunate that my boss is an animal lover. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was very hard. And I went back to work after I had done it. And, you know, she just said, don't you want to go home? And I didn't. At the time, I didn't want to go home because the dog wouldn't have been there. But the mm-hmm. fact that she was there to comfort me was very helpful. I mean, she understood. Like, I just didn't have my head about me, you know, and it was just very nice to walk back into that situation and to be there among people who had compassion for me.
That is so important and rare.
Right. So yeah, I was glad in reading, you know, some of the stuff in here where there was a lack of understanding. I was fortunate that I didn't have to go through that.
Yeah, it's so amazing to me. I mean, I people my life with, you know, like-minded and like-spirited people who have that love of animals or compassion toward people who love animals. So I don't encounter it as often as other people do, but I'm constantly hearing from people saying, oh, I was so embarrassed that I was just crying, and, oh, I feel so stupid because I feel this way, and these people don't get it. They just keep saying, well, what are you crying about? It's just a dog. Go get another one. And, you know, my jaw still drops that people would be so thoughtless and say that, but pet loss grief is a form of disenfranchised grief, similar to, say, someone who's had a miscarriage. You know, people may be well-intentioned, but they just say, well, you'll have another one. You've got a chance to try again. That doesn't address the loss of the individual connection you had with either that baby, that fetus, or this animal. They're not interchangeable parts, you know. You can't say, oh, I'll unplug this chihuahua and stick in a German shepherd. It doesn't work that way, you know. 63% of all American households have at least one pet, and among those, 99% consider those pets part of their family.
I'm so glad to hear that percentage because I have to say I was a little concerned it might not be that. It might not be that. So,
yeah, and well, and they feel it, but a lot of times they're not the most outspoken ones. It's the kind of, well, if I can say it, jerks who are more likely to, you know, roll the eyes and shrug you off as, oh, you're just hysterical or something if you are really hurting. But how does it not make sense that you would be going through a grieving process when you've lost a source of unconditional love, 24/7 companionship, total acceptance of you? I mean, I can't make a list of people I can get along with every hour of every day and just adore them the way I can my animals. And, you know, many people will say, you know, they love their animals because they give unconditional love. But I counter with not only that, but they give us sometimes our only practice in giving unconditional love. They give us practice in becoming better people. And that's kind of an ironic thing to say, but it's true because, you know, when you're driving down the freeway and someone cuts you off, I'm not just sending love and joy to that person. I'm like, get off your cell phone, you know. And So when we come home and we have our pets, we can at least take moments and be in that space where we just, I just love you. And that's where that stays.
Right. So, Sid, you know, you did go through quite, I mean, you're right, a tsunami is almost like not even, doesn't even describe the loss that you experienced in such a short period of time.
Oh, yeah, I became an expert.
What were some of the coping strategies that you adapted with this, and especially with not having the compassion for the animal losses that you experienced?
Well, one of the things I did that I'm very glad of was actually when my mother was passing away of lung cancer, I knew that all the people around me were going through their own losses, and I couldn't continually dump all my feelings on them because, you know, they're handling their own stuff. And, you know, people reach a point where they just have compassion fatigue. They can't give anymore. So instead of burdening the people around me, I actually did a preemptive thing and went into grief counseling before the fact so that I could process all the myriad emotions that I had, you know, good, bad, happy, sad, the whole thing with my mother all the way through to her memorial service. And I think that really helped me stay strong. And then when I had lost subsequent pets, I knew that it was important to get that support from people. And I, being an extrovert, and that doesn't just mean talking a lot. Being an extrovert means you process your emotions outside of yourself. So I need to talk and hear it or write and see it to really work through things, as opposed to an introvert who may be quiet but mostly processes feelings and thoughts internally. So when something like this happens to me, I reach out, and, you know, thanks to email at the time, I was able to tell people what I was going through and get all these floods of, you know, we're praying for you, we're thinking of you, we're so sorry. And that helped me to not feel so alone. And then, for instance, when my Westie Ludwig passed away, my second husband now and I decided we need to have a memorial service for him. So we threw a funeral, but we had 30 human beings come to this dog's funeral. And that alone was amazing, but we had opened it up and made it not just about him. We made it an all-pet memorial service, and people came, and I had this thing set up where there were little cards that said, in loving memory of, and a blank, and they could write the names of all their past pets that they'd lost and fill that out, and we put it on kind of a little, you know, card tree. And then everybody brought pictures of their animals, and we all shared stories of, you know, the animals' lives and how they touched us. One lady had a picture of her St. Bernard from 50, that's 50 years earlier, and just to show you how long and deep and lasting those ties are. And, you know, and then we shared food and tears and the whole thing. And it was very cleansing. It brought some closure. And I left the tree up through the holidays. And then on the new year, I took every one of those little in memory of cards and said a thank you and a prayer and put them in our wood-burning stove and sent out the prayers to the universe just to thank every last one of those animals for what they brought us, you know, all of us collectively.
Well, that sounds like a beautiful thing to do. And that's part of what your book is, too. You talk about not only going through the grieving process, but some memorial things as well, some ways to help them afterwards. So that what you did was absolutely beautiful.
And I don't want people to think they have to put on some big show. If they're very private people, like, for instance, my sister who has the daughter on her same birthday, she's very private, and she doesn't want to reach out to everybody. She just, you know, had me come over or whatever, and we took a walk and everything to reminisce about her pets. But it can be something as minor as, say, lighting a candle and sitting in quiet meditation. That can be a memorial. It can be drawing a picture or painting a memorial stone or something for a garden that you make for your pet's memory. It can be writing a letter or a story or a poem or even a song. It can be anything you choose. But what's really important is that you don't skip over this aspect altogether. Even if it's just, I'm going to call one friend who knew this dog and we're going to share some stories about their lives and just say we really miss them, that's enough if that works for you. But if you don't get to that point, if you just stay trapped in the tears and never get to the celebration of their lives and thanking them for what they brought you, you risk a lot in getting stuck in any stage of grief. There are, you know, things that will happen to you if you bury the emotions. They'll come out some way, sometime, whether it's physically, you may become ill, or it can go underground and come up inappropriately and explode on you with other relationships. Many times I found out, I'm just part of a statistic, many, many, many marriages, long marriages, end after one of the significant other's parents dies, because it brings up so much that was welling and beneath the surface. So it's really, really important to vent these things. And also, I hear from people all the time in my work as an animal chaplain, when they're in the throes of the pain, they just say, I'm never getting another pet again. Never. This hurts too much. And there may be people for whom that stays true, and you know, I feel kind of bad, but it has to be a personal choice. But for the most part, I urge people to think in terms of what their animal was in their lives to teach them. They came here to teach them about unconditional love and about living in the moment. Now, if they pass away and you say, I am not going to take those lessons to heart, I am not going to share love or live in the moment with any other animal, it's in essence like you've plugged your ears, closed your eyes, and gone, la, 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 la. You're ignoring them, and it's very disrespectful of what their purpose was. So if instead you can say, I'm going to give myself all the time I need to work through these feelings, but then I'm going to, you know, ask this pet who's passed and say, will you please help me find the exact right next needful animal that wants to be in my home and in my heart, then you don't have to feel that sense of, oh, I'm betraying this pet's memory. You know you have their paw print on there. They're sanctioning this. And, you know, it can help you to feel closer to them, oddly enough, as well as view the new pet as, you know, so purposely chosen for you to fill the exact needs you have. Not that they're picking out their replica, but that they're picking out the next animal whose particular personality and particular needs will reflect to you what you are needing to learn about yourself. And, you know, once they've passed over, they're really tapped into a vast amount of wisdom that we can't understand on this side of the veil. So you can really trust that that's what's meant for you, and it helps a lot of people to move on, because it really is sad if you totally shut down because of that. You're not doing the pet any service on the other side. They love you wherever they are. They forgive you whatever has happened, and you choosing to suffer over here and to not help and support all these animals who need homes is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, and there are so many animals out there. My daughter's a Girl Scout, and one of the things that Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts inevitably do is they go to the animal shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, that is like, you know, I want to just leave with all of them.
Oh, it's brutal.
It's challenging to do.
When I look on my Facebook news feed, every single page I scroll through has, this is urgent. This pet will be put to sleep in 24 hours. You've got to save them. I already have 8 pets. They're all rescues. I have 4 rescued West Highland White Terriers, 2 rescued cats, and 2 rescued finches. If I could, and I live in Minneapolis, in the heart of the city, so if I could, I'd have 400 million more, but I can't, and it's very, very difficult to have to close an eye and keep scrolling. You know, I send out prayers for them, but no one person can do it all. And that's another part of that compassion fatigue. If you get yourself to feel so overwhelmed by the need that is so endless out there, you'll burn out and you can't do anything. So sometimes you have to step back and say, this is how much I can accomplish, and that's all I can do.
Right, right. So as an animal chaplain, what do you do? Because until I really read that, I don't know, until I really read your book, I don't know that I knew what an animal, or had heard of an animal chaplain. If I had, it was kind of like in the back of my mind, like it wasn't in the forefront of my awareness.
Well, I don't think it's in anyone's forefront. It's very much a burgeoning thing. A lot of people say, what the hey, when they hear pet chaplain or animal chaplain. People are able to actually kind of self-define it at this point because it's so new. But I know of some people who call themselves animal chaplains because they have animal communication abilities, and perhaps they offer communication with the animal before they pass, during, and after. I don't claim to have that ability. I instead view it more as I am a specialized grief counselor for the person who is left behind. Because when you look at it the way animals do, they view death as a very natural transition. They don't fear it. It's just like walking in the next room to them. The only thing they would fear naturally is pain and suffering, you know, before they get there. Just, you know, like going through this whole tremendous loss and developing the relationship with death that I have done so has made me completely unafraid to be dead. But I am still afraid how I'll get there, you know. And, you know, no one says, gee, I'd like to have a degenerative disease that makes me suffer for 30 years. You know, no one wants that. And animals don't have any option to release themselves if they're suffering. So a lot of times what people seek me out for is in helping them to understand when it might be the best time to let their animal go. And that's a really hard thing. And if people are perhaps stuck in denial or something, first of all, if you're stuck in denial early on, you might avoid seeing symptoms of something that could actually be treated and actually, you know, save or prolong your animal's life or reduce their pain. If on the other end of things, you know they're dying, but you stay in denial, you prolong their suffering. And then on the other end of that, you're going to end up dealing with enormous guilt feelings afterward. What I try to tell people to do as best they can, and it helps if you kind of do this before you're in crisis, if possible, is to pull yourself out of the equation. Look at things as objectively as you can. I have people make a list of what things their pet loves most in his or her life. You know, is it chasing a ball, going for walks, taking swims at the park, playing with the catnip mouse, or whatever that case may be. It might even be finding a little patch of sunshine, curling up and sleeping there. Make that list, and then as your pet ages or becomes ill, you can check off the things they can no longer do. Maybe they can't go for walks. They can't, you know, sit or, you know, stand up on their own, or they can't walk. It may be a matter of, you know, your cat loved grooming himself and being beautiful, but now the grooming has gone by the wayside and they're having incontinence troubles. Those kind of things you can say, okay, this is not adding to the quality of my pet's life. And that's really got to be the basis of all your choices, is what is the quality, not just the quantity. If you have an elderly pet, for instance, who is diagnosed with cancer and they're arthritic and they're going blind, it would be wrong, I would say, to say, yes, I will put them through chemo and surgery because it might buy two more months of life. That's not fair to the animal. That's coming from a place of your own fear, and when you do get to the other side and you view it again, you're going to feel so selfish that, again, the guilt will follow. I I know that with animals, there is a unique situation in that we feel very, very responsible for their well-being. We don't have this situation as often with human beings. Sometimes you'll have one who has a living will and says, I need you to promise me you'll pull the plug if I, you know, am in a vegetative state or what have you. Then you know clearly what they want. Well, your animal can't tell you that. So it's up to you to be very in tune with them and see what's going on with them and intervene on their behalf.
You know, I will agree with you on the prolonging, because when I had to put my dog to sleep, what had happened was he had gotten out of our yard, mm-hmm. and we must have had something. There was someone down the road, the trash was out, and they had been having someone get in their trash,
mm-hmm.
and they had put antifreeze on the trash bag to stop that. And
my
dog got out of the yard, and of course, the trash was there. I guess that, you know, had been broken into, maybe he did it or whatever. But anyway, when he came home and we noticed that he was sick, we didn't know why. And so, you know, we took him to the vet and they said that his kidneys were failing.
Oh,
and, you know, we kept him overnight. They kept him overnight. But and when I got there and nothing was better, I did agonize over that, about the fact that I just didn't do it the night before and nothing had improved, because he was not feeling well.
Right. Well, there is a point at which you really have to cut yourself slack, though. If it's an acute thing like this, it may very well be worth trying reasonable medical intervention to see if you could turn it around. So I think you need to definitely forgive yourself on that. That was not prolonging ridiculously. If the vet had told you flat out, there's nothing we can do, but he's going to go downhill no matter what, then that's a different story. But if, you know, say pumping their stomachs or giving them activated charcoal could help, then you would be right to try that. I know of a story of a woman who spent well over $80,000 on her dog, who had undergone minor surgery and something had gone wrong and his spinal cord had been nicked during the surgery and he was paralyzed from mid-body backward and couldn't move. He was like a 125-pound dog, and she just continually had people come to give him therapy, and he had a wheelchair but he couldn't move through the house because it was too big, and all he could do was lie there until he got sores. And he had bladder failure, and he was constantly bleeding out, you know, urinating blood. And she'd take him to the vet 3 times a week for that. And everyone around her was begging her to let this poor dog stop suffering, because she had a second dog who was healthy, and she absolutely abused it and ignored it and wanted nothing to do with it. She was addicted to the crisis of this ailing dog. And, you know, eventually, oddly enough, the well dog passed away abruptly, and that kind of like prepared the road for it, and this other dog died naturally maybe 2 days later. But the lady has some serious, serious emotional issues to deal with now, and it's such a tragic, tragic story on so many levels. But no, your minor intervention was totally called for. Another way to look at things sometimes, too, to relieve yourself of guilt is, in the wild, animals instinctively know they must mask their illness or their pain or their infirmity, because to show weakness means they're going to be driven out of the pack and left to be killed by a predator or so forth, or their pack or whatever will turn on them. So it's very likely sometimes they won't show you they're sick until it's really advanced. And that's not your fault. That's the way nature built them. So that's another thing to kind of keep in mind. We do the very best we can to make the most compassionate and selfless choices we can, but some things are simply out of our hands.
Right. You know, I have to admit, I'm going to go ahead and admit this. When you first contacted me about being on the show and I saw the topic, I thought, oh, I have an older dog. And I thought, oh, maybe this is the preparation. And so I went ahead and it wasn't like I was going to refuse it anyway, because, I mean, this dog has lived a good life and she's, you know, just getting bigger and older. And, I mean, you can definitely see that, you know, she won't be here forever. Mm-hmm. But what I've found in it that I think is more relevant, because my older dog is doing fine,
mm-hmm.
We have a litter of puppies that are ready to go in a week. And they have become, I mean, you know, the dog that had them is just, you know, she sleeps in my bed with me. I mean, she's just my little buddy. And so the puppies, we've really bonded with these puppies. And after, I guess sometime last week, it occurred to me, I wonder if this book was designed for me to, you know, be able to, like, prepare me to let go of the puppies. So do you ever find that people, that breeders get attached, and it's not the literal loss of the puppy, but I'm finding it hard. I'm concerned about the homes that they're going to, even though I know that, you know, the people that have stepped forward, they're responsible pet owners.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're looking at a foster failure 8 times. So I'm not I know I could never be a breeder, because I would have 600 pets. I could never let them go myself. So you are not alone in that. And I do truly hope that the book does help you with that letting go process. But I know what you're talking about. That is really, really hard to give them up. And I admire the folks who can, the ones who work in humane societies or animal rescue, and they take in fosters. And because I've seen them when they've brought them to pet adoption days, and everybody in the room just cries when the pet gets adopted, not only for they're so happy that it's got a new home, but because it's tinged with sadness because you're having to let them go after you've bonded. And when there's such a strong need, between that animal and you, that makes it all that deeper. And so you have my sympathies. It is a different kind of loss, but ultimately loss is loss. Whether it's you've lost a sense of financial or emotional security, whether you've lost a job, whether you've lost someone to a physical death or a relationship has ended, or you're recognizing your own aging process, there is a constant flux of various losses in our lives at every moment, just as there's a constant flux of incoming lessons and joys and experiences. And it's a matter of letting those flow through and taking from them the lessons you need to. I don't know if you have any plans at all with the elder dog passing, if you intend to keep one of the puppies yourself to carry it on. You know, I found that when we had lost our Ludwig, he was our only Westie at the time, and that loss hit me so hard because I hadn't come home to a silent, non-barking household for umpteen years, you know, 15, 20 years. So that silence was just deafening to me. Whereas when my Mortimer happened to pass away right after I finished the book and turned the pages into the designer, thank you, universe, for just questioning whether I knew what I was talking about one more time. He became the epilogue, or epidog, as the case may be. But as painful as that was, having my other two Westies, Blanche and Keeley, mitigated it to some degree because I knew I was still needed. I couldn't just lie in bed and sob for 3 days. They still said, I need to eat, I need to go potty, I need to get a walk, you know. And so they helped keep me anchored in the present and looking toward their future. But having brought them into our house while Mortimer was an elderly guy, you know, gave him additional months of almost revisiting his puppyhood until he took his turn for the worse. And so that can happen as well. You know, just it's such an interesting thing to observe.
Right. Well, the dog, our older dog, is a Shepherd Chow mix that I've had for quite a while. And then the parents of the puppy of the litter that we just had, they're little rat terriers.
Mm.
But the mama dog, it's really interesting. My Shepherd Chow is really dark. She's like she's solid black, and she's just very dark, like dark eyes. Everything about her is, I mean, except for her personality. By no means does she have a dark personality, but her look, she's just dark eyes, dark fur. And then my little mama dog, the rat terrier, it's funny, she's got more of that whippet look in the rat terrier, and so she almost looks exactly like my Shepherd Chow did when she was little, except she's all blonde. She's got light eyes. She's like her opposite, but their personalities are almost identical.
The photographic negative image.
Right. So, yeah, I mean,
one's big, one's little.
Yeah, I'd like to keep one of the puppies as an excuse for Luna, just Luna getting older. But I, you know, we've got these others that are still pretty young, and I don't. We definitely would keep them, but they'll be better off, you know, going with where they're going. They've got good homes they're going to. So,
well, that's the important thing too. Is, you know, when you interview the people and you check out, you know, go to their homes if you need to and see where the environment will be. And if you can see with your own eyes and experience for yourself and trust your instinct that, yes, these are good people and they will be doing right by them and so forth, that can ease the pain of letting go. It's, you know, the uncertainty of, oh, did I just sell that one to make a quick buck, but I don't trust they're going to take care of them well, and it's going to be locked in a kennel for 12 hours a day, or, you know, whatever. You know, it's important. A lot of these rescue organizations do a fabulous job of going into homes and interviewing. I remember when Keely, our Westie, who was at the time 6 months old when she came available on Pet Finder, when we saw her, dozens upon dozens of people had charged in and said, "We want him, we want him, we want him," because it's a puppy, you know. And they were looking through that, and they just eliminated anybody who said they had no idea what a Westie was, because these are strong personality little guys, you know. And we were able to say, we're a Westie-wise household. This would be our fifth or sixth Westie. And so they had brought it down to just between our home and one other in Minneapolis, and they were coming for a visit, and I confess I stacked the deck. I had my sister come out because she could attest that whenever if we go out of town overnight or something, all the dogs go to her place, and it's like Puppy Club Med over there, and she's just as big an animal nut as we are. And then I had our friend Kathy Menard, who owns the Urban Dog Walking Service here in the Twin Cities. And we said, she's our pet sitter. If we're gone for even 4 hours or more, she comes in, plays with them, feeds them, lets them out, and the whole thing. And so I wanted them to really, you know, see, look, there's a village going to raise this dog. And then the biggest selling point was she met Blanche, who is slightly older. She was like 3 years old, I think, at the time, another Westie. And the two of them raced around our house like little Keystone Cops and ran so fast that Keely slid into a door. And, you know, they saw that, and then they said, well, we, you know, owe the other family a chance to visit and so forth. So they left, and they took her along and called the next day, and they just said, Keely made it really clear who she wanted to live with when she played with Blanche. So we got her, and woohoo! But that's the kind of thing that they want to look for. And, you know, sadly, human beings don't get checked out that much to have their own kids. And that's really unfortunate, because I think we could do a lot better job with, you know, parenting if somebody looked into what they were getting into, maybe trained them, maybe even licensed them or something. But at least it's a right step for the animals, because many of these have come from abusive or neglectful situations, and they're really going to need understanding and tender, loving care. So Right. Yeah, I'm sure you're doing that with the people you sell to. It's not just, you know.
Yeah, my husband thinks I'm crazy. I mean, like, he's glad I'm doing it, but he's like, you know, people are going to think you're nuts. I'm like, that's okay.
Oh, no. You can say my pet chaplain said I'm not nuts.
That's right. So, Sam, if somebody needs to get in touch with you or they want to purchase your book, can you give out your contact information? And is your you sent me the book, so mm-hmm. I have to confess I have not looked for it in mainstream media, but what is the easiest way for them to get your book and to contact you if they needed your services?
Sure, there are all sorts of ways. To get my book on my site, it's www.goodgriefpetloss.com. And when you order through my site, there are two little bonuses there. One, you can have it inscribed any way you want, you know, in loving memory of Sparky or whatever. And, you know, I'll autograph it and sign it however you'd like. And $2 from that sale will go to support a no-kill animal shelter. I support 5 of them locally. If, however, you don't want to pay for shipping and handling or something like that, you can find them at Barnes & Noble, Borders. Virtually any bookstore can order them through a distributor. They are also even available at many libraries. It's a matter of going in. I mean, you have to take the time and, you know, investigate. Do they have them? Am I on a waiting list? Or can I have them order it or what have you? So there's that little time delay there unless they happen to be in stock. It's also available at Amazon.com. And, I think that's about it. As far as reaching me, if you need any animal chaplaincy services, you can email me at goodgriefpetloss@gmail.com. And if you are not in the Twin Cities area, of course, I unfortunately can't probably see you face-to-face, but I'll be happy to email with you and give you whatever support I can, refer you to other resources, you know, online pet loss support, hotlines in your area, anything I can do that way. You can even arrange to call me, and I'll talk to you through that if you need to discuss your choices about when it's time to euthanize and what your options may be thereafter. If you want to talk about ways to get yourself organized for a memorial service or a funeral. With people who are in the Twin Cities area, I am available to accompany them to their pet's euthanasia or to go in with the animal if they themselves do not feel capable, but they don't want the pet to be alone with just the vet or vet tech. I can, you know, certainly come to their homes and help them with the decision making. I can help them plan a memorial. I can come and perform that. I can do animal blessings for groups. There's like National Pet Memorial Day in September. It's the second Sunday every September. There's World Animal Day, October 4th, I believe. So, you know, if they're planning events like that, you can have an animal chaplain come and do an entire group blessing. I'm available to speak. I'm going to be talking about pet loss and how to support other people through it as well as yourself. The Minnesota Boston Terrier Club is coming up. I've spoken at Honoring the Animal Candlelight Vigils. I've facilitated support groups and so forth.
That's a lot of stuff. That's great, though. Thank you for the contact information. I wanted to make
absolutely.
Sure we got that out there. It probably, I'd like to do it more than once in the show, but
sure.
I got so involved in talking with you. I do want to ask, though, Sid, we've got about 15 minutes left, and I didn't want this to take up a lot of the time, but I do want to make sure that we get it in here for people that might need it. What would be, you know, when would be a good time to call you? What are some signs if somebody needs to kind of talk to you about, you know, should I look at euthanizing, what's going on? What are some things that they might need to start looking for where they might want to consider? Because somebody, perhaps a new pet owner or, you know, somebody that didn't have animals growing up, I mean, what are some signs that they might need to maybe consider either talking to you or going to talk to their vet?
Sure. It's very important, even early on, to come up with that list I referred to before, the list of things that, you know, show you evidence of their quality of life. Another important thing to do is to think through their priorities and say if they're traveling or something, they might want to work up a list of instructions for whoever is taking care of the pet that in this instance, I want you to go ahead and do this. If my dog is hit by a car and cannot be saved, don't keep them around for me. Let them go. Or conversely, you might say, do whatever you can to keep them alive until I can come and say goodbye. But you need to work through those kinds of questions yourself, and it takes a lot of the pressure off the caregiver if you've made something very clear that, you know, if my dog is poisoned, like yours so sadly was, if you want your wishes for them not to suffer to be carried out, make that clear. I'm very willing to talk to people about any of that if they see that their animal is aging or they're slowing down or showing various signs of illness. You know, obviously you want to check with your vet. You want to rule out anything that can be taken care of with reasonable medical intervention. I'm really not a believer in keeping animals or people alive simply because we have the technology to do so. I think a lot of time that gets abused for various reasons. But I am always willing to be a sounding board and, you know, for them to describe what are you seeing, what changes have you've been witnessing the pet go through, and, you know, just to give them that kind of peace of mind that they are at least taking the time to think it through, not to just respond from an I'm panicked mode, but to say I have a plan in place that I can at least default to if I'm, you know, forced to or if somebody has to do that in my proxy.
Great. You know, as you were speaking, I just happened to think about the movie Marley and Me.
Oh, ouch.
And, you know, I was looking at that going, you know, they really did watch for his quality of life, and they, mm-hmm. you know, they, I mean, obviously we know the movie version. I haven't read the book to kind of see, but that is such an endearing movie. I mean, even my husband, who's this big burly guy, is, you know, at the end of the movie, he's like, wow, that was a tearjerker. It really got to him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's yeah. such a good representation of how, you know, even though that pet was so chaotic, they just loved him. I just think that that's such a great home that he had, at least the movie version.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I find that some of my rescue pets, you know, they'll come with issues. Well, you can get issues with, you know, anything. But a lot of times, if they've been shuffled from home to home, they have separation anxiety and trust issues and so forth. But in a weird way, sometimes the ones that take the most effort to love beyond their bad behaviors, they end up really burrowing deeper in your heart than the ones who are just perfect.
Right.
And maybe that's the same for some parents or something like that. But, yeah, I don't know. My mom loved my black sheep brother real well.
That is such a true statement.
I don't know why it is, but, you know, the harder you work for something, the more sweet the reward when you finally get them over or you save them or something like that. This is like changing tracks, but I was wondering if I might share one particular story from the book. A lot of my book is devoted to afterlife connections with both animals and people because that was a huge, huge part of my own personal healing after all this loss. As I had mentioned before, developing a better relationship with death really helped. And to do that, I looked back over my life and I saw how many times I was given signs and evidence that the soul lives on beyond death. And when you can see objectively that that's the case, it's easier to get past a death. I mean, you can view it more like, okay, I have a friend I love dearly, and I can no longer see her because she moved to California for a great job. You may, and this is before the days of Facebook and so forth, but so you have to kind of pretend you wouldn't be actually in contact much anymore. But knowing that they're okay and they're doing great where they are gives you a really deep sense of comfort that you can take and, you know, get past that pain of missing them a little bit better, rather than if you feel like, oh, they're just gone. They just disappeared. There's nothing anymore existing. And so what I included in the book was also examples of the human afterlife connections, because when you have straight from the human's mouth, this is what I'm going to send you, and they do, it can help even the most doubting Thomas believe that that's a possibility. Because as Einstein said, nothing is ever created or destroyed. It simply changes form. And that was his reason, strongest reason for a belief in the afterlife. So I have this story called Mavis's Ladybug, and I'd like to share it. Mavis was my friend. She was in her late 60s and just, you know, an angel on earth, did so much for everybody, just an amazing, amazing woman. Well, she was dying of cancer and various other comorbidities, and she was in a nursing home. And just a few days before she died, while she was still lucid, I said, Mavis, we have to discuss something. I need you to tell me what you will send me to let me know you're okay when you pass. And she thought for a second, and she said, a ladybug, red with black spots. I think they're classy. So I said, you got it. I'll be looking for that. Well, she died on a Wednesday in September of 2007, and that Friday I was performing a wedding ceremony at a golf club in Shakopee, Minnesota. And I had gone into the ladies' restroom beforehand to freshen up and wash my hands and reached for a paper towel in a basket there, and I stopped dead because on top of the paper towel in this building was a ladybug. And I put it on my palm, and I showed the bride and her entourage who were in the bathroom, and then they all yelled at me because I ruined their makeup because they cried. Because, you know, they said it was good luck. I said, oh, it's a lot more than that. And let me tell you about it. And I ran around showing as many of the 250 guests as I could. Look at what my dear friend just sent me. And fortunately, no one rolled their eyes. They just went, wow, that's amazing. You know, they understood this was out of the ordinary or super normal. And that bug just sat on my palm, kind of stretching and preening and so forth, didn't move at all. And I just said, okay, fine. You're just going to be with me, and I'm going to do the wedding with a bug on my hand. So I did, and it was, you know, went beautifully. And after a while, I realized, oh, I've had my hand turned upward for an hour, and I'm getting a cramp. So I said to the ladybug, I have to put you on my dress because I've got to turn my hand over. I put it near my chest, my hand near my chest, and it crawled instantly and sat where a brooch would be on my dress. And we have Polaroids taken of this. And it stayed there while we were signing the licenses and so forth. Then it started to kind of get antsy and crawl around. And I said, I know, you got to get going. So I put it back on my hand, and it just kind of tucked its little legs in and pouted. And I said, no, I'm going to take you. It's okay. I know you have to go. So we went outside to near the waterfall where I had just done the ceremony. And I said, where are we going to put you? Oh, there's some beautiful purple impatiens plants over there. I'll put you there, okay? And I'm talking to this bug. And I walked over to it and extended my index finger, and it instantly climbed down my hand, down my finger, and onto the flower. I turned to my husband and gave him a hug. I looked at the sky and said, Mavis, you rock. And I turned around, and it was gone. And then later the bride came chasing after us when we were leaving. She said, tell your friend how happy we were she came to our wedding.
Too funny. I don't know if you noticed, when you were telling that story, as soon as you started to tell that story, I started getting interference on the line. I don't know if you could hear that.
Oh, no.
But it was like a, Yeah, it was like a party line that, and just the whole time you were telling the story, it was in there. And at one point, even the phone was ringing. It was almost like the lines were joined, and I'm like, I hope this isn't interfering with the guests being able to hear. But now that I'm speaking, that all that noise is gone.
You know, they often use, you know, forms of natural energy, you know, electricity, water, fire, whatever. They'll come through with their messages through the natural world. And a lot of people will say they hear things on their phones, they see images on their computer screen that shouldn't be there, and so forth. So I don't doubt it at all. She, you know, popped in to say hi. And it's been amazing. Throughout the years, she has sent me ladybugs in the weirdest places. When I went back to acting in theater, it was an opening night in November in Minnesota, winter, and I walked into the ladies' restroom. She likes restrooms. I went in there just before I was supposed to go on stage. There's no windows, no nothing, and it's in the heart of this building, this theater building, and there's a ladybug on the mirror. You know, and, you know, some people may say, oh, that's just really a bunch of weird coincidences. But it, for me, it's not, it's like turning that phrase on its head. It's not seeing is believing. Believing is seeing. These things are around us all the time. And if we are open to it and unafraid, we can then start to see them, and they can bring enormous comfort. I mean, I don't have to feel like I'm without Mavis. I don't have to feel like I'm without my mom. She sends me cardinals, you know, and I've got all sorts of stories about that. And people from the world over had sent their stories of their afterlife connections with their animals and so forth. And they really, really do continue to exist, and their love does live beyond the death. And if we can get to the point where we're okay with that, we just know, okay, we're separated for a time, but eventually we can be reunited as, you know, that loving energy that's out there, or however you want to view it, if you want to view it as heaven, or, but we will not always be separated, and it's very comforting and brings a lot of strength if you can view things that way.
And that's a beautiful sentiment. Thank you so much. Well, we are getting near the end of our time, so I would like to thank you so much, Sid, for being on here and for, you know, sharing your story. I want to remind everybody that Sid's book is Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. You can find it in mainstream bookstores. She says it's in the library. If you get it from her directly at www.goodgriefpetloss.com, then she is donating $2 to No Kill Shelter, so that's a great way to purchase that book and support the No Kill Shelters at the same time. So, Sid, again, thank you so very much for being
thank
here
you.
And for sharing your wisdom.
And you're so kind to just let me ramble.
Oh, you know, I just love organic shows. I just think they're just so much better. That's my preference. Just let it... Let it go, you know, flow with the go is what an animal message was to me, or go with the flow, go with the flow. No, flow with the go is what it said, flow with the go.
That's
yeah,
wonderful.
I just love to do that. So, well,
I
again,
appreciate
thank you.
So much you're letting me be here, and I hope that anyone who's facing pet loss can find some strength and comfort and just enjoy that love in the moment. That's what they're here
right.
for.
Right. Well, thank you for touching on a very overlooked topic and for putting the book out there. I think it's a great way to really have other people become aware of it as well. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I'd like to thank everyone who joined us, everyone who will be listening to this in the archives. The archives are available to you. Please enjoy this show as well as others that are there. I hope you'll join me on the 20th when Stephen Victor is here talking with us again. Looking forward to having him. And please do check out the Honoring Hour main website, www.thehonoringhour.com. You can find out a little bit more about the Experiencing You project that Karen Wrigley, an animal communicator, and I are doing together. Also, upcoming shows on Facebook. Please do so. And please also find us on Blog Talk as well. And you can find those links on our main site, again, www.thehonoringhour.com. Thanks for joining us, and have a fantastic day.